Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Facebook Live, I can confirm, is now on.
Oh, hello, Facebook Live.
Hello, Facebook Live.
Oh, I want to take my hood off. I look like a scally.
Yeah, I want to clean my knees. I look like a gardener. I've been gardening all day.
Phil, you look impeccable.
Thanks, mate. Lovely Canterbury stash.
Mm. You look like do you know what you look like? You look like a quantity surveyor who's had a day off.
Looks like a sort of Robbie Henshaw if he got tumble dried and came out a little bit small.
Shrunk in the wash
slightly.
Right, let's stop this chit chat, get our hands in and pod on three, shall we?
Yeah, let's do that.
Hands in, pod on three. 1, 2, 3.
Pod. Far from unbelievable. Hello, Egg Chasers. This is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, a podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are just three mates that love the game. I'm Tim, JB.
Hello, Tim.
And Phil.
Hello, Tim.
And thank you very much for listening. You're probably listening on Acast, you're probably listening on iTunes, or it could be anywhere else, doesn't really matter. Subscribe in those places and leave your messages on iTunes. Thank you very much for doing so. This week's podcast, we're going to be talking about the British and Irish Lions squad. More reaction to that. We're going to be, because we had our special midweek podcast, which was only up for a very limited time. So
2 hours.
It was only up for 2 hours. It got quite a few listens in that time, but that was a special treat if you heard it. If not, then we will bring you some highlights of that in a little while.
Not sure.
We will.
Not sure.
British and Irish Lions, we're going to be talking the England squad, the semi-finals in Europe as well, and Phil has prepared a quiz.
Indeed.
It feels like... we've all been back a full week now. I'm feeling acclimatised. We've had so much rugby news to talk about. I'm looking forward to a long stretch as we go into the Lions now.
Yeah, business end of the season.
Oh, yeah.
It really is business end of the season now. It's just going to be big game after big game until the Lions tour starts. Yeah, and then it's big game after big game after big game.
See, if I had a token moan, it's that some people do not appreciate the back end of the season, the back end of the domestic season, when the rugby gets seriously good, because all eyes are on the Lions.
Yeah.
So, yeah. There's going to be a little bit taken off the Premiership final, which is going to be incredible. Whoever gets the European Cup final, by looks of things, is going to be incredible.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
you couldn't ask for much better final, could you? Right from the start, we have been championing Saracens and Clermont as two of the best teams in the competition, and they have demonstrated that.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about the games now, or do you want to wait for that?
I think we should kick off and deal with the British and Irish Lions, because that is...
Oh, go on then.
I mean, it's the biggest rugby occasion in the last 4 years, so I think we should start with... In fact, I'm going to go with... You get it ready, JB.
No, I can't. I refuse to, because we've already played it.
No. There's good reason, okay? Oh, JB. You've got to now as punishment. So Wiggles left us a 5-star review on iTunes, and it said 5 stars purely for # peak Teo. He did it. He only went and blimmin' did it. So let's rewind, a year and a half? JB called peak Teo when he made the wider England training squad. He said,
No, I didn't.
When it was the 60-man squad or whatever it was. Didn't. When did you call Pete Teo?
When he was at Leinster, because no one had seen him play.
I called Pete Teo when he won the NRL Grand Final with the Rabbitohs.
That was pretty good, actually.
That's a pretty high watermark.
Do you know what it demonstrates really nicely? I had this thought the other day. It's a difference between how Leinster go about doing their research and their recruitment and how Bath go about doing their research and recruitment. They splashed a load of cash on Sam Burgess. We don't think we need to talk about that, although I'd happily do so if you wanted to do that for an hour. And then Leinster go and do almost exactly the same thing, but no one really spoke about it so much.
Yeah.
There wasn't any T-shirts made. There wasn't any fanfare. Didn't go visit the embassies. Didn't do anything. Just went and played rugby.
Are either of you thinking that this might be similar to Lancaster's plan for the World Cup, where Burgess basically made the World Cup squad as Sonny Bill Williams' kryptonite? But obviously Lancaster never got the chance to put the two of them together.
Interesting. Do you think that's why Sam Burgess went as a Sonny Bill counter?
I think there's certainly an argument. Because there's another argument that England brought him over. I know that they didn't actually pay anything to the end, but they were instrumental in him actually coming over, and they needed to use him.
So is this like rock, paper, scissor, stones, whatever it is, right? Which is allegedly Sam Burgess beats Sonny Bill, but Sam Burgess gets beaten by Jamie Roberts, and Jamie Roberts always gets beaten by Sonny Bill.
And well, Sonny Bill was always beaten by Mark Nunley because he was always on the bench.
Well, let's actually start with Jamie Roberts, because this was one of the... I mean, the amount of leaks and things that were coming out in the build-up in the 24 hours or so, 36 hours before the Lions announcement, the one that was led by a Sky Sports source, and then it was followed by The Telegraph the next morning, and then the BBC also reported Jamie Roberts was going and Jonathan Joseph wasn't.
Yeah.
As I understand it, now, Warren Gatland did say after the Lions selection that the selections went on and they only finally decided the evening, Tuesday evening, before the Wednesday morning announcement. But as I understand it, Jamie Roberts was never in contention and never considered.
Well, I'm going to have to differ with you there. He was definitely considered at some point, but he wasn't ever in contention.
So it wasn't that he was in the squad and that's what a Sky Sports source heard and then he got bumped out again. He was never in the squad.
Can I just say this on a wider point? What is the point in these leaks?
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it isn't high-level government policy. People's lives aren't going to be changed by it. It's just like ruining a film. It's like a plot spoiler. It's actually quite frustrating, though.
But it sells papers or it gets clicks onto links. Mm. And that's what it is. It shows two things. One, it highlights that the importance. So it does seem more important to get clicks rather than journalistic integrity. But it also highlights that the security around the team and the confidentiality around the team was top notch, because it didn't get leaked.
Did some of it get? I mean, it's so hard to tell what got leaked and what didn't, because we don't really know. Or, you know, I'm so confused now. Which sources said what? Who was right about it? Who was wrong about it?
Well, whoever the Sky Sports source was completely and utterly wrong. And I gather that Warren Gatland was extremely upset about it, and Jamie Roberts was devastated.
Well, I think that's the worst part, isn't it? It's like the contracts we spoke about last week, where everyone gets a contract, and then once you get picked, you sign your contract. That's the worst part, is being told by the press you have been picked.
Yeah, I mean, and getting your hopes up.
Must be miserable.
So we all saw a few videos of people finding out, because apparently the players all found out via Sky.
Yeah.
So there's a great video of Lee Halfpenny and his family.
Oh, is there? I've seen the Jack Knoll one. I think that's brilliant.
Yeah, Jack Knoll, the Saracens.
The Saracens
lads.
One's great.
Not seen that one.
I'm certain that there will be a James Haskell video. There's no way that James Haskell wasn't recording that.
Oh, that's so true.
Yes.
There will be. I would never want to watch it, because it would be heartbreaking to watch.
It would be.
But there will be a James Haskell.
Oh no, but it wouldn't have been someone filming him. He would have been filming himself with a selfie stick, and then he just deleted it straight away.
Hang on, just quick
Possibly.
Question. Did any Wasps get picked?
Just Daly.
Yeah.
Oh wow. And that's probably why it's been so quiet over there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because Launchbury is the one that everyone was talking about post-announcement. Let's do this more generally. We've dealt with the leaks. We've dealt with Pete Teo. What's your general reaction to the squad? We can get into specifics in a bit, Phil.
Pretty happy, to be honest. I think the team that we picked 37, and there were five people from ours who didn't get in. But they were all kind of fringe players from ours.
And there was 41.
and there was 41, and the guys that did get in were either over and above, or
they were the ones that narrowly missed out.
They're kind
out
of fringe players. For example,
Pain Train.
Pain Train, which I'm very happy with. Courtney Laws over Launchbury is a bit of a toss of a coin.
Yeah,
and they'd only be fighting out for the bench slot anyway.
Well, what I gather is we're waiting on this, but Alan Wynne's injury isn't good by all accounts.
Really?
So potentially you could end up with four English locks.
Yeah.
Probably, you'll have two English locks starting, one on the bench and one watching in the stand.
Who do you think Seymour's going to room with?
Oh, I don't know. Who would you have to room with? So there's quite a lot of unhappy Scots saying this is an outrage. We've only got two players. I haven't seen any coherent argument that justifies why any other Scot deserves to be on the plane. There might be some that you could say are kind of 50-50 decisions, maybe marginal, but there's no strong, unquestionable case for any other Scot being on the plane. No.
Okay, so so before the podcast, I read you some stats about Hamish Watson. I'm not going to read them all now, but Hamish Watson's stats compare very favourably to Sam Warburton. Do you not think there's an argument, just from a statistical point of view, to include him?
Well, you should ask Phil on that one, because I don't give a damn about the
fake news.
No, I don't give a damn.
Doesn't trust experts.
You can have a point of view and find any statistic that backs up your point
of
view.
Yeah, but it's actually
Sam Warburton was great in the Six Nations. Hamish Watson,
great in Six Nations,
was okay. Was good in some games and really poor in others.
Yeah, true. He
got schooled versus England.
I mean, Wales only finished third bottom.
Hamish Watson got schooled against England, as did many Scottish players.
The
Gray brothers completely butchered their chances of going in that England game.
I mean, there is literally not one statistic over about 1,100 minutes of rugby where Sam Warburton beats Hamish Watson. I'm not calling for Hamish Watson over Sam Warburton. It's just an interesting point.
I think you'd get exactly the same if you compared Tipperick to Warburton.
Do you reckon?
Tipperick is more athletic, gets involved more times, more dynamic, have more line breaks, more offloads, all of those things.
What about more tackles, more turnovers?
Maybe.
I mean, that's quite interesting as well, isn't it?
That would be borderline, I think, between those two. But I would always have Warburton over Tipperick.
Hamish Watson, less missed tackles.
Yeah, yeah.
Although more turnovers conceded, leave it at home.
One guy in the back row that didn't make our 37-man squad was Ross Moriarty.
Yeah. Not even considered, really, by us.
I mean, it's quite a big surprise, though, the number of Welshmen in a Warren Gatland squad.
Is it a surprise?
12 Welshmen. Right, so this is my one issue with the squad, I think, when you look at it. How Lee Halfpenny got on that plane, I do not understand. Warren Gatland said he was going to pick it on form. He said he was going to watch the Six Nations and make his decision. I don't understand it.
Right.
Jonathan Davies, Lee Halfpenny, explain to me, JB, you're a Welshman, explain to me how, other than...
Don't pin this on me.
other than Warren Gatland's, he obviously loves those players, and I get that, and he knows what they can do, and they have been in the past exceptional, and they were on the last tour. But if Warren Gatland was true to his word and say he's just picking on form, how are Lee Halfpenny and Jonathan Davies on the plane?
Well, do we know anything about Lee Halfpenny's form? Because I've not seen him play it too long.
I would only base it on the Six Nations.
Right, okay. The answer is I don't know. Jonathan Davies, I don't watch Pro 12, don't know. On the Six Nations, Jonathan Davies is relatively solid. I guess it's a case of trusting what you know. That's the only thing you can really say.
Then come out beforehand and go, I'm going to trust what I know, and then also there's some spots available for players that play well.
But he never came out and said the contrary to that, did he? He did.
Well, he said exactly the contrary.
He said
to
he
that.
Was going to be based on form in the Six Nations and the final stages of the European Champions.
Yeah,
Cup.
That's a tough one, isn't it? That's a tough one to back up.
Halfpenny did in the Six Nations. He made one pass that led to a try.
Oh my! He did, and that was probably one of
what?
I mean, that's
he passed a ball.
He passed a ball.
Passed a ball, and it went to the
interception. Was it interception? right. Okay. Let me ask you this question, and don't. Do not just blurt out your initial thought. Think about it for maybe 2 seconds. Would you like to see a Lions restructured? So, say 40 players went, it had to be 10 from each country. Just have a think about that a second.
I'm in favour of... So, it links into this. and I'm sure it's something I'll touch on again when we talk about the England squad later, I'm in favour of players that have qualified by residency not going on a Lions tour.
Hang on. Is that yes or no to...
I guess it's a kind of half... It's a no directly to that, but it's a yes to the... It's just another way that I would structure. I'm not against tinkering with the way that you select a squad and having extra rules just for the Lions.
I quite like that because it balances out the squad.
Yeah.
It makes sure that each one of the unions is equally represented. And
it'd be unfair on some players from England this year who have an incredible amount of pool of talent, and you get some mediocre Scottish players going. And how? Imagine watching that. You're sat home and you're George Cruz, let's say, or you're Mauro Itoje going, and you're sat there and you're watching both the Grey brothers because Scotland need to fill their quota of 10. That's just not fair. That's not
yeah,
right.
I'm not sure I quite like it.
I quite like it. So they all put their 10 players forward. It's horrifically political.
It would be horrifically political.
Yeah, there'd be absolute heartache. And also, I mean, the whole point of the Lions is it's an amateur tour in the professional era and they're not meant to win. So why don't we make it a little bit harder again and really make it amateurish?
The Lions are already hamstrung enough because they only get together. So they finish the domestic competition. The week afterwards, they're playing their first game. They're four nations thrown together at the very last minute, and they play 10 games in a 5-week period, and they're expected to beat the best team in the world.
Brutal schedule, isn't it? It's a brutal schedule.
Do you know, I actually
schedule.
Think, it's... this might sound mental, but I actually think some of the provincial teams might be as good, if not better, than the All
Blacks. Yes. Well, they've come out and said that Canterbury can play their full team, haven't they?
If you've watched...
With all the All Blacks.
If you've watched Crusaders, Chiefs, or the Canes this season, they
Canes.
Are...
Canes!
They are incredible.
The same goes, and we'll talk about Saracens in a bit, but Saracens against New Zealand would be a good shot, would be a good match. genuinely, yeah, be a really good game, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I'd love to see Saracens take on the Canes. Just because it's such a contrasting style.
Yeah.
That'd be brilliant.
Oh, just very briefly, let's not labour on it too much, but on my point about... So, he deserves to be there on merit as a player, but for Ben Teo, I would say... It's not the pinnacle of Ben Teo's career would have been playing for New Zealand.
Yeah.
That he would have regarded that as the pinnacle, the highest accolade he could have received, and like on an emotional...
How do you know that? Have you asked him?
Well,
Is he Australian?
I haven't asked him. He's half English, half New Zealand.
I thought he was half Australian.
No, he lived in Australia. I think I've got that right.
Well,
CJ Stander
in New Zealand.
It won't be as special. And I think his parentage is New Zealand, but his and Samoa and his grandparents. Anyway, CJ Stander won't feel the same wearing a Lions shirt as he would have done if he'd worn a South African shirt.
Do you know what? I disagree. And I actually think it means more to him to represent Ireland. Because
the British Lions I'm talking about.
Well, okay.
He hasn't grown up dreaming of wearing a Lions jersey. He grew up dreaming of wearing a Springbok jersey.
Doesn't matter. He might have grown up dreaming of that Springbok jersey, but when they kicked him in the teeth and told him that he couldn't play, he was too small.
No, I understand all this.
I actually reckon that when he pulled on the Ireland shirt, it meant more to him because he proved everyone wrong.
Oh, no,
and
I,
the Lions
I get that.
Will be another step up again.
Yeah, I know.
So
what you're saying is wearing the Lions shirt will feel special because it's a big two fingers up to all the people in South Africa that doubted him.
Yeah.
Not exactly. Well, your point was it's the amateur thing. There's the history. We've got over 100 years of British and Irish Lions. You know, all the
and
history.
And your point is it'd mean more for him to play for Springboks. I'm just saying it isn't. It doesn't.
Well, I'm just saying that I like the amateur. I like the history. I like the tradition. I like the amateur ethos. And so I would question, and it will never happen. So it's just I'm putting it out there. But I would question whether the guys that qualified for their nation by residency, guys like Ben Teo, CJ Stander, whether it really means as much to them as maybe it should.
Yeah, and I think it does. And especially in Stander's case, he was told you're not big enough. You got to play hooker. And here he is. Pulling on the Lions shirt, it will mean the world to him.
So it will mean the world to him, and it will. There is no doubt in my mind that all of those players will give everything. They will give as much as anyone else. I kind of the question about growing up, dreaming of pulling on the white shirt or a red shirt or a black shirt, whatever it is, Springbok jersey. Courtney Laws, for example, he didn't start playing rugby until he was 17. Mm. He would not have grown up dreaming of playing for the Lions or even England.
I bet you ask any of these lads and you say, maybe in a few cases they wouldn't answer this way, but I reckon most of them would say, if you asked, would you change anything? They'd probably say no. It means worlds for me to represent England, Ireland, Scotland, whoever it is. I'm pretty sure of that. So, yeah, I'd take your point. If you asked a five-year-old, they would want to play for their nation of birth. If you asked the adult who has earned his right to pull on that shirt, I don't think it stacks up.
And if you ask me, would I play... Would I earn £22,000 a game?
Pay me now.
For my young family, or would I play for Samoa, where my parentage and my grandparents are from, or New Zealand, if I had the chance, I would pick England £22,000 a game and look after my family. Yeah. I completely understand.
I would throw my Samoan passport into a wood chipper.
But exactly. But I guess that therein is my point, that the professionalism versus the amateurism ethos of the Lions. But there you go. Anyway.
I do like the amateur element of the Lions. I'm all for player welfare and that kind of thing. I almost do like the, you've got to play 10 games in a 5-week period, the ludicrousness of it.
Yeah,
and
meat grinder,
the legacy, the legacy of it.
Would you add any other amateur elements to it? Because I've got a few, which I'd... Well,
just like...
You've got to arrive on a ship.
That's a good shout.
It starts in December.
Yes.
So it's a Maersk-sponsored tour.
Yeah, I think so.
They put them in shipping containers.
Exactly. No, it's got to be an old-style cruise ship. They've got to have lots of port calls where they get rowdy.
I can see the Vunipolar sharing a shipping container for 28 days as they travel around the world.
I've got a lot of good ideas when it comes to Lions.
Just out of interest for you two, who was your biggest surprise? Either biggest surprise in the squad or biggest surprise not in the squad.
Right. Biggest surprise. Well, had it been 37 names, then I didn't think... Probably Lee Halfpenny. I cannot work it out.
I would go with it with that as well.
I would say biggest surprise left out has to be Launchbury. Incredibly unlucky. Biggest surprise inclusion, not to be boring, it's got to be Moriarty. No one saw that coming.
Yeah, Moriarty.
That's a good shout.
Moriarty and Jared Payne as well.
Yeah, Jared Payne.
But so...
Although take the credit, Phil. You've been calling for the Payne train for years.
Ever since he moved from New Zealand to Ulster.
I've got to say as well, even though I didn't think he would go when I picked my team, Finn Russell does have the feel of a Lion. You know, I don't know why.
The amateur era feel.
Yeah, I'm kind of very upset that I won't get to see him pull on a red shirt. That would have felt right.
Not this year.
Bigger missed the last tour and he'll probably start the test now.
So the selection of Moriarty, Jared Payne, Ben Teo, Jonathan Davis, it does kind of hint a little bit at the kind of Gatlin. They're all big, physical boys, aren't they?
Can we formalise this? Are we calling it Warren Ball or Gatlin Ball? I prefer Gatlin Ball, but I've heard Warren Ball being used a lot this week.
Personally, I like to be formal. Warren Gatlin Ball?
Either or.
I don't really care.
Gatlin Ball. I prefer Gatlin Ball, but...
Yeah, call it what you want. I'm not interested.
So I do just wonder if the squad kind of hints that is going to be, particularly for the tests, the big games, that is going to be the direction they're going
to
take.
If you think about all the styles available to you and you've got 5 weeks to implement something, that's probably the easiest one to implement, isn't it? I mean,
true.
You just need to be singing off the same page and you're halfway there.
Yeah.
Like, you can't go and reinvent the wheel. You couldn't get Mike Ford in and do some complex rugby league type stuff.
Well, they've got Rob Howley as attack coach, so they're never going to do any complex rugby league.
So it'll only take 5 minutes to learn the scheme. So that's a massive plus. There you go. Lions done. Do you want to talk about England?
No, not straight away. We'll save that one. One thing I do want to bring to the table, though, is something that I saw. So I was in La Rochelle last night. And after the game, we were sat around in the bar, the producers and the assistant producers, and then Flats and Ugo were there, and Ali Eakin and stuff.
All right, big shot.
No, that's not what I meant. That's not what I meant. But I hadn't seen this video, and we were talking about, because in the context of the Lions, we were talking about the motivational speeches, because everyone you know, thinks about those Jim Telfer, Ian McGeachin and stuff. And then someone said, oh, have you seen this particular video? If you want to talk motivational speeches, have you seen this? And I hadn't seen it before. It's the first time I've seen it. It's about 2 weeks old, this video. And I checked with you two, and you haven't heard this. But
Who is it?
It's a football team.
Okay.
In a cup final, the trophy cup final, Billericay Town. Now, some people will have heard this video, but if you haven't, this is how football do motivational speeches. So the fella is called Alan Turvey, and he's the boss at Billericay Town.
Oh, I'm looking forward to this.
Who won their game. So this is them. There may be some strong language in this, so I apologise, but here we go. So he insists that they all do one particular thing before a game. And, you know, let me just set the scene, actually. So we know that Saracens, after their European Cup semi-final win, would have done the song in the changing room.
Tiki Tonga.
Tiki Tonga.
The worst song ever.
Massa, Massa, Waya, etc. Well, this is the song that Billericay Town did.
I fucking knew it. We're going to get here, we're going to sing the song, I've put some words in the middle, we're going to sing that song properly, then I'm going to do the thing where you shout greatest, because that worked on the Saturday before, right? So you suck in deep now, you get in this fucking circle, and you sing this for your fucking lives.
Come on, boys.
Right, so they're getting up to sing a song.
Come on, sing it for your lives, boys. Get in there.
Sing it for your lives. So this is going to be passion, right? This is going to be anger, passion.
No, it's a wind up.
R. Kelly's the greatest. This is not a wind up.
This is a wind up.
That's what I thought, JB. That's what I thought, JB, but it's not. And he's going, shut your eyes. Listen.
Oh, God.
What? They're singing R. Kelly's the greatest. And they're meaning it.
What are they doing?
Did they know they're being filmed? No, I'm not having it, Tim. No way.
What's amazing is you'll hear in a minute the coach go, shut your eyes, shut your eyes. Seriously, shut your eyes, boys.
No, no. Shut your eyes!
Shut your eyes, a key change is coming.
And then he reads a poem later on and makes them shout, I'm the greatest.
When others are doubting, what are we?
The greatest!
I will always honour, respect and protect my brothers in this room today in Orange. I have trained my mind. I trained last night as I'm going to play today. Today my body will follow. I acknowledge that my opponent does not expect for me to iron him out today in this battle. But he doesn't realise I will never surrender. Who are we?
The greatest!
So, greatest. Wait, just let me... That is before a game.
That's before a game. Before a game. They right. sang R. Kelly's the greatest.
Have I ever told you my R. Kelly story?
It's not. I mean, just one. That is not a piss take, because that was exactly my reaction, JB. I went, no, they were having a wind-up.
I'm not buying that either.
It's not a wind-up, I promise. Go and look at it. It's not a wind-up.
But also, what isn't a wind-up is this.
Yeah, go on, R. Kelly story.
I went to watch the Lions in South Africa the last time they were over there, whatever year that was.
2009.
Yeah, and we were stuck in a... casino, and we had nowhere really to go. Some of the lads had gone to Pretoria to see the second test, and we were buying beer off the Miller Lite girls, who were quite attractive. So they were selling crates to us, they were selling us scratch cards too. And after we bought the beer, one of the girls said to me, do you want your scratch card? I went, nah, I'm fine. What's going to possibly come good to this scratch card? Well, as it happened, she scratched it for me, came back to find me and said, oh, you've won two tickets to go to the R. Kelly after party. So I couldn't get back
after
to...
After the party is the hotel lobby.
So I couldn't get back to the hotel in time. But luckily, I remember what I was wearing, which was my Havaianna flip-flops. I was wearing the old-school cotton rugby shorts from Colwyn Bay.
Nice.
And to top it off...
You like short shorts as well.
And
your
I do
rugby
like
shorts.
I'm really into short shorts. And I was wearing my pink Stade Francais top.
Nice. Good look.
So it was me... And this other guy who's a hardcore Christian, Mike Rainey, also a solicitor, the most straight down the line guy you can ever meet. And we rocked up to this R. Kelly party, and everyone, unsurprisingly, we were in South Africa, everyone was achingly cool in like leather jackets. He comes out, and of the 100 people in there, he actually stopped and had to have a second look at me and Mike in our rugby tops and our little cycling rugby shorts. Yeah, I've been to the R. Kelly after party.
After the club, it's the after party.
Exactly.
And then
we didn't get to the hotel lobby.
And right about 6, we gotta clear the lobby, so we go up to my room and somebody.
Exactly right.
That somebody was you that night.
Yeah, I've never felt so out of place. Never.
Well, I'll tell you, you're a big lover of short shorts. This is a wonderful little segue into the semi-finals in Europe. Jackson Ray and Maro Itoje are challenging Sonny Bill Williams. They went for extra tight shorts for their semi-final.
So they're medium boys, I think, those shorts.
Yeah, they were.
They look good, though.
Yeah, look great.
It's a very rugby league thing, isn't it, to wear short shorts?
It is.
The more of it, the better. I like it. Yeah. They work hard on those quads. Let us see them.
And don't do a Gloucester backline and wear short shorts, but extra long cycling shorts.
Yeah, Trinder's on this bus now, isn't he?
Yeah, sort it out.
Trinder's always been on this bus.
Yeah.
Not on at all.
So, everybody, all of us, thought that it would be a tight game. I think most people did.
I said 12 points.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, you did. You did say Saracens were going to win comfortably.
Not comfortably, but 12 points.
Me and Phil had a funny feeling for Munster. They were smashed. It wasn't just a win for Saracens. They battered Munster.
It could have been worse, couldn't it? Because Saracens wasted 3 tries. I think the very odd exchanges, Munster looked the better team. Like scrimmage-wise, first, say, 15, they looked okay. They were very abrasive. They came out very, very strong. But I just think Saracens are so much more clinical. And later on as well, I thought, what's his first name?
Vincent Cock
was brilliant.
He was man of the match.
Yeah.
And imagine how, he's one of those guys that'd be really good looking if he wasn't a prop. It's just, his face is mangled now.
I see that. Yeah, Saracens are devastating, aren't they?
They are incredible.
I mean, they just seem to know what to do, when to do it, and in those big games too. I mean, they're not afraid of going anywhere.
That Richard Wigglesworth butchering that try early on, that would have been an unbelievable try had he caught that. Amazing hands.
I'm sure he's going to go down as one of the best players never to get serious international recognition. I think he's brilliant.
Well, we could talk about another one that didn't get a lot of recognition and has been brilliant, but he played for Clermont. Well, a couple of them. Benders and Strettle.
Yeah. Yeah,
but he's just he's just the thinking man's scrum half. He controls everything. Without him, I don't think Saracens are nearly as good.
They're not.
If one scrum half goes down in the Lions squad, I'd have Wigglesworth called up next. I'm not bothered with Laidlaw.
No.
Yeah.
In fact, Gloucester look better without Laidlaw now. I'm going to say it. I think Hines is doing a much better job.
He worked his nuts off.
Hines is a very good player. Yeah.
So should we delve a little deeper into the Saracens Munster game then?
So when we saw the scenes and the state of the stadium pre-game, I thought my prediction was going to come true. Mm. I said it'd be, well, the first prediction did come true and it was a sea of red. And it was. Not helped by the fact that Saracens had brought their own flags and they'd brought red flags. which seemed
odd decision.
It did seem an odd decision, but it didn't matter. Mm. Munster did come out of the blocks very well, like you say, and they looked good in that first half. But the Saracens, the black wall of defence was
so impressive, isn't it?
Impenetrable. Until the 78th or 79th minute when they were 3 scores up and CJ Stander finally bulldozed over. Yeah, it was. It was incredibly, incredibly impressive defence. And the control of Wigglesworth and Owen Farrell was exceptional.
Yeah, now, not to sound too Tim-like here, and I know it's going to come across very Tim-ish, but what I liked most about this game is actually just the spirit and the style of these two clubs. You couldn't get...
Culture.
Yeah, well, I mean, Saracens culture... Not the Stuart Lancaster type where you've got to phone your mum every 5 minutes. But the actual culture of Saracens where, they're all obviously good lads. They all enjoy each other's company. But it's got balance. It feels like a proper rugby club. They go out drinking and then they work hard and then they play hard. It's just it's an amazing club. And on the other side is Munster. And I don't think after this weekend enough good things could be said about the Irish provinces. I think last year there's 30,000 odd people went to semi-finals. This year is 90 odd thousand, just because of the inclusion of the Irish.
Yeah.
So just from that perspective alone, an incredible occasion. What another just observation I'd make as well. I kind of have alluded to this in the past. Sean Maitland, if he was good at rugby, would be one of the world's great players.
If he was interested in rugby.
If he was interested. If he just tried, you know. I don't know what... He looks like he just doesn't understand the game. Twice yesterday, he cuts inside, he doesn't back himself on the outside. I could go on about Sean Maitland for a long time.
I know.
I call it that Munster completely choked yesterday. They were, yeah, you're right, they came out the blocks, scrum was brilliant, 10 minutes, loads of pressure, defence. Every time they had the ball, their kicking was awful, which is one of, again, that's one of the areas they missed Conor Murray. But
yeah.
Blay and Dahl just had a bit of a shocker. In fact, this weekend, you could probably categorise down to fly halves, pretty much. There was fly halves that had really good days and fly halves that had absolute shockers in all of the games. And Munster had nothing. They had nothing going forward. They had one out. They popped one out ball and ran up. So easy. They made it so easy to defend. And I think had Saracens taken some of those chances, like Wigglesworth, for example, and there was an Ashton one as well, I think.
Ashton Goode with the overlap.
They could have been, Saracens could and probably should have been 20 or more points clear.
Yeah.
With half the game to go, and I think had that happened, it could have been a bit of a cricket score because Munster would have played into Saracen's hand trying to attack from deep.
Don't think I like the term bottled it though. I don't think they bottled anything. I just think they were soundly beaten by a better team. I don't think there's anything Munster could have done to beat that
bottled
team.
It in the sense of why were they just popping one out and running in
how much of that is a function of the Saracens' oppressive, crushing defence.
Yeah, that's fine.
The line speed and the communication and the organisation to prevent any gaps.
And also, the one at rugby, I mean, it definitely was a factor, but it did feature far heavily deep into Saracens' territory, which is actually what you want to be doing anyway. So I don't like the idea that they bottled it. I'd like to give more credit to Saracens, who I just think are absolute terminators.
Yeah. Incredible.
I think you are right there. I think Munster were put under such pressure by that suffocating defence from Saracens.
I think an early score would have... I think an early score to reflect Munster's early pressure would have made it a much more interesting game.
Because it is infuriating, frustrating and kind of restrictive when you have that possession and you just can't find your way to the line.
Yeah. I suppose if you're talking in terms of bottling it, that would be the key one, wouldn't it? And also... You know, the Munster lineup wasn't as imperious as it's been in the past.
Well, so Peter O'Mahony had a couple of two or three brilliant steals on that Saracens lineout. And when Peter O'Mahony went off, it was admittedly the damage was already done by then. He is a big, big loss.
Yeah. Do you think he'll be a Lions starter in the tests?
I looked at him in the lineout and thought, yeah, he's really good. I looked at him around the park against Saracens and went, oh, God, I'm not so sure about him now as a starter.
I just love how angry he is continually.
It does feel like he's hardly played because his first game back was the Ireland-England game. I think I'm right in saying that. So he's not had a huge amount of game time under his belt.
So if you didn't start Peter O'Mahony, would you start Jackson Rafe the Lions?
Well, his name might come up in a discussion about England in a little bit.
He's on one of my lists. He's on my spreadsheet somewhere.
Yeah. So, moving over to the other semi-final, because it's going to be in Edinburgh, it's going to be Saracens versus Clermont. And, yeah, another fly half that had a pretty special day. Owen Farrell, we just don't need to throw any more superlatives at him. The guy was just incredible.
He was incredible, but do you know what... uncharacteristically he did. There was a lot of times where he put himself too flat, and Saracens put a lot of ball on the floor, particularly in the first half. I thought that was very weird. He was good with the boots, but even some of his out-of-hand kicking wasn't spectacular. He was all right, but I'm a little bit tempered on that one.
Camille Lopez, he was tip-top. Drop goals, long-range kicks, kicking it into the corner. He was the man for Camille Lopez.
Yeah, and that first half, I do feel that, well, it clearly was a tale of two halves in the game. First half, Camilo Lopez was exceptional. Second half, after being anonymous in the first half, Sexton did play very, very well.
Mm.
In that second half, he showed his real class.
But isn't that kind of the thing about playing French teams is the first 20 minutes, it's going to be an absolute onslaught.
And it Clermont was.
Clermont aren't the typical French team, but, you know, that, they still came out the blocks pretty strong.
That first 20 minutes of Clermont was like nothing I've ever seen.
Mm.
They were just so dumb. Every run was so making yards, offloading, their decision making, their kicking was perfect. Yato, the Fijian number 6-7.
Quite something, isn't he?
He was incredible. Stretel was incredible. Oh, they were magnificent.
Yeah. The last time I saw a team play like Clermont, it was Clermont, and probably against Exeter in the group stages. And prior to that, I mean, when they've beaten Saracens, they've looked very, very good. I mean, they're scary.
The problem I think Clermont have is when they play like that, that first 20, 25 minutes, they were unplayable. They were so dominant, but there is no possible way that you can keep up that pace for anywhere near 80 minutes. For not even, you can't do it even close.
Well, do you think this is their finals problem?
It might well be, and it might be. So it's one thing, when you look at Saracens, so the way they finished that game was magnificent. And you say, are they just fitter to a man than other teams? Or is it a combination of marginally better fitness and also incredible organisation and decision making that means they don't have to work as hard? And I think it's
efficiency.
A combination. Yeah, efficiency.
Like KPMG style efficiency.
Exactly.
Well, do you know, like, if all three of us were really, really fit, okay, like equally as fit, because we did the same pre-season or whatever, but we did it in separate camps, I honestly think it's the guy who believes he's fittest that is fitter. And I think that's what Saracens do. I think they just believe that they're fitter.
I think if you and I, JB, because we've played a lot of rugby in similar positions.
Mm.
Wing. If we were equal aerobic fitness, I think, as this sounds really bad, I think I would look.
No.
What I'm saying is, I think you are in, what you were, and there's, sorry, maybe let's take it away from me and you. You're really physically destructive, like a ball carrier. I was kind of a bit more of a thinker, would try and pop up at the right place at the right time. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that's what Saracens do. They just have really intelligent players.
Yeah, I kind of
basically, what I'm saying is, I could have been a Saracen.
Yeah. I could have played for Clermont.
Yeah. That's what we're saying. That's what we've got to. Good. Agreed.
It's exactly what I'm taking out of this conversation.
Going back to the belief thing, I think that's kind of where Clermont... I mean, I'm not going to go into the Clermont mentally weak stuff because we know they're mentally weak because of the amount of...
Finals that they've lost
and semis that they've lost and all the rest of it. But taking that into a game situation, there was a time today in the Leinster game where I actually put money on it. I thought that Leinster had stemmed the tide and now they're going to come back strong and win. And they nearly did.
Well, the turning point was the Levy try, pull back on Rougerie or holding on to Rougerie. If that's a try, then Leinster go into the lead. As it was, they conceded 3 points from a penalty.
Yeah.
That was mad. It's a 10-point swing.
Equally, then, think about that efficiency and conserving energy and using it in the right place at the right time, as Saracens do. What would Saracens have done if they were 2 points down, as Leinster were at one point, and then collected a restart with 10 minutes to go in the game, or 9 minutes to go, and we're in their own 22. What would Saracens do?
We've got different views on this.
What would Saracens do?
Saracens would have kicked it.
They would have taken territory,
yep,
trying to put pressure on the opponents to either win a penalty by good defence to try and get the 3 points, or to get a turnover and then attack from closer. What do Leinster do? Tried to play it 2 points behind, 9 minutes, play it out their own 22. I was calling it. I was shouting at the...
You were saying,
what are they doing playing in their own 22? They're going to give away a penalty, 3 points. It's what happened.
But
and that's where the game
where
was.
I think what Leinster did was acceptable. You know, when you are Saracens, you are built first and foremost to defend and play that strategy. When you look at the game today, as it developed, the most success Leinster had was deep into their own territory, but in their own territory, busting the line and going forward. So in that respect, I've got sympathy for them wanting to keep the ball in hand. And also, Clermont were tiring. And it is tiring when you go through 12, 13 phases. So I didn't have a massive problem with it. But you are right. Saracens would have kicked it. And that's why they're going to potentially be champions.
Mm. Yeah, I'm with you, Tim. I it was a bit frustrating. You just think, don't play rugby in your own 22 in that situation. It's the risk-reward thing as well.
But Leinster are significantly better equipped to play that type of game even than Saracens are. I mean, if you look at their personnel, I mean, they could do that.
I'm not so sure you look at their back three and go, oh, yeah, they're the guys that are going to...
Yeah, but it's not Brad Barrett and Marcelo Bosch. Do you see what I mean? You know, they are... Well, I mean, Ringrose scored from exactly that situation.
And that was a hell of
a
try.
Oh, wow, yeah. Let's mention that. We mentioned Jonathan Davies being on form, not lucky to get on the plane. A lot of people who would have been calling for Gary Ringrose will feel vindicated by that.
Yeah.
And maybe a bit more annoyed at his lack of inclusion.
You do possibly wonder, because I was thinking, last weekend Ben Young scored a brilliant try.
Yep.
And you do wonder, did that, if the decision was only made on late on Tuesday night, did that factor into thinking?
And they're scrubbing off Kieran Marmion from the plane.
And Ben Spencer, strike through. So I do wonder if Gatland had his chance this week, would that try have been enough to get him in? Arguably it would have been. It was incredible.
It was very impressive.
Yeah, it was. Right, we can talk about the Challenge Cup semi-finals in
yes,
a little
let's
bit.
Let's do that.
In a little bit. Phil's prepared a quiz, though. But before that, I'm just going to remind you that it's that time of year when people start thinking, the sun started to come out a little bit this last few weeks. People start thinking about...
Shave your face.
People start thinking about, you know, making themselves look a bit respectable. Those winter days when you just go into hibernation and don't look after yourself, they're almost done. So get yourself sorted with the best razor on the market. It's a Cornerstone razor. There was a whole BBC documentary which basically championed Cornerstone razors, and that's several years after we've been loving them. So they are the best on the market, number one in the GQ Awards, beating Gillette and Wilkinson Sword. And the thing is, you can hear us talking about it and say how much we love it. Give it a go for less than a cost of a pint in your average pub these days. For £4, you could get your own engraved aluminium shaft with your own initials on it and your first order of 6 razors, and you can try it for yourself. £4 if you go to cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, cornerstone.co.uk/eggchasers, or
egg10 at checkout.
Right. Phil, you got a quiz?
Pens and papers ready?
Yeah.
Or phones ready? Or
phones,
whatever you're going to write it down on?
Yeah.
Snapchat ready?
So 8 questions, general rugby knowledge. Question number 1.
Hang on. Okay. It's not...
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
I'm going to be stupid with this stuff, like, what weighs more, like, Somani or a crate of bricks? Oh, something like that, something which I would never know.
The one I seem to remember doing, Dave Attwood described Sam Burgess as worth his weight in gold. but which is worth more, Sam Burgess's 3-year contract or Sam Burgess's 114 kg in gold?
What was the answer?
I can't remember.
Can't be the gold, right?
I can't remember.
Especially in today's markets. Anyway, go on.
Yeah, anyway. So, question number 1.
Yeah.
Billy and Mako are the third set of English brothers to tour with the Lions in the past 24 years. Can you name the other two pairs? So, there's two other pairs of English brothers who've toured with the Lions at the same time.
Okay. By the way, just as you're having a think, I'll just just a mention on the Facebook feed. Someone was going, what's with the mermaid pose, JB?
Mermaid pose. Fine. Because people go mental about the feet. So
I thought it was because you're wearing very short shorts and boxer shorts as well, and maybe you're worried about the boys coming out of the barracks.
No.
I've just seen the way you were sitting from the angle of the Facebook live.
No, people go mental about feet for some reason, so.
Oh, you're keeping your feet off screen.
Yeah, but no, you've got feet.
If you put your footrest down, you might be a bit better.
No, it's my dungeon. I'll sit how I want. Next question.
Okay, yeah. Next question. Joe Kokonaisaga?
Yes.
I was probably pronouncing that incorrectly.
Fijian Joe.
A man who I tipped you off about quite a while ago, yeah?
No, you didn't.
Fiji Joe, yeah?
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Yes, I did.
No, you didn't.
Ages ago.
We've got a London Irish fan that texted us about him ages ago.
No, before that.
Before the London Irish
remembers,
blogger.
Phil remembers.
You tipped us off about Fiji Joe before the London Irish blogger.
Yes.
Amazing.
Tim, don't forget, Tim had a mole in the London Irish camp for a very long time.
That is true.
I did.
So, as Eddie Jones said, he's big and he's fast. That's all he needs to know.
okay.
Did you see that?
Yeah, it was almost like Eddie Jones was asked about all the players and he went through it. It was almost like he didn't want to offer any analytical insight. He was almost like, I've been away for a bit. Everyone's been talking about Gatland. I want you to talk about me. I'm going to do some one-liners.
Yeah.
Because Harry Williams, big guy, needs a haircut, was what he said about Harry Williams.
He said wow. About the Curry boys, they're competitive, compete about everything, rugby, gym, girlfriends, haircuts.
Yeah, haircuts, yeah.
Anyway... Fijian Joe has been selected for England's summer tour to Argentina. Who was the last championship player to play for England?
The last championship player to play for England.
So the last player who was in the championship at the time who played for England.
Okay.
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 Question 3. Which Waikato Chiefs winger has signed for Leinster next season?
No idea. Don't even know the Waikato Chiefs wingers. So that's the end of that one. Or do I?
I can tell you he's got a few good tries this season.
Yeah.
Okay.
Question 4. Which team did Wales and Lions legend Shane Williams play for and win National Bowl with last weekend?
Okay.
Got
I know that one.
I know it as well. I can't remember. It's a stupid name as well. Nope.
He got done a couple of times by a big chunky lad from the opposition.
I've seen that. He scored a hell of a try from about 50 yards out.
He did.
Oh, God damn it. This is not...
Next question then, quick, before we can think of it.
Next question. Quick game's a good game. Who plays at Ellis Park?
Okay.
Question 6. Which 3 new coaches are teaming up with the Ireland squad for their summer tour to the USA and Japan?
Good God, I have no idea.
Good question. I don't know that. Next. If neither of us know it, let's just...
Have a guess.
Have a guess, okay.
So three new coaches.
As in they're new to the Irish setup.
New to the Irish setup, yeah. They have coached before or are coaching elsewhere. But they're new to the Irish setup.
Okay.
Which club? So question 7, two to go. Which club did Bath sign Peter Stringer from in 2013, I think it was?
Yep. Straightforward.
Okay. Have you got that one?
Yeah.
I think I've got that one.
And question number 8. Who preceded Johnny Sexton as first choice fly half at Leinster?
My God, it's so long ago.
it really is.
Oh, wow.
I've got a name. I've got the wrong name. God damn it.
No.
No, this is too old. This is far too old, my guy. Oh, okay, don't know.
Okay, let's go on.
Question number 1.
Yeah.
English brothers.
Youngs and Underwoods.
Youngs and Underwoods.
Correct. So, 2 points each.
Next one. Worcester player.
Fijian Joe. Who was the last person who played for
Chris Pennell?
Chris Pennell
is correct.
Written down.
Yeah, very good.
Both 3 from 3.
He got his single minute in an England shirt against New Zealand in 2014, a few weeks after Worcester had been relegated.
Yeah. I remembered the answer to this question, but didn't let on that I did because I didn't want JB to start thinking too hard about it. I wanted him to think I didn't know either.
What was the question again?
Waikato winger,
Leinster.
Do you know JB?
No idea.
James Lowe.
Is correct.
Never got that.
Yeah.
Tim takes a lead. Takes the lead.
4-3.
Shane Williams, which team does he play for? JB?
No idea.
A man.
A man. Oh.
Is correct.
Yeah. 5-3.
Going down hard.
Ellis Park.
Ellis Park is?
Auckland Blues?
Blues, yep.
Oh, no, is Eden Park. It is the Lions. Ellis Park is Johannesburg Lions.
Oh, no!
So neither of you got it correct.
Ellis Park's not in New Zealand?
No.
No, oh,
Joburg.
God. Oh, rubbish. Right, can we just have 3 guesses at this without losing points?
So I won't take any points off you, but
it's not negatively
marked. No negative marks, but you can only give me 3 answers.
I can't even think of 3 names. I just said Leo Cullen. I don't know whether it was one. I don't know if they him in.
So I've gone with Lancaster, Cullen and Flannery.
Is all incorrect.
Oh, I won't bother. I just said Leo Cullen. Les Kiss? I don't know.
No. So it's Ronan O'Gara.
Oh, yeah.
Felix Jones.
Wow.
Okay.
And Gervin Dempsey.
What's nice. Gervin Dempsey been doing with himself?
Presumably coaching.
Coaching. Yeah. I couldn't tell you.
He's had a serious crack habit, but we're just bringing him in. All right.
Okay, 7, the question that JB was definitely going to get right. Which club did Bath sign Peter Stringer from?
Have I got this
Newcastle.
Right? Oh, I think you're right. I've said Saracens. That was earlier in his career, wasn't it?
Lone Saracens.
Saracens is incorrect.
Damn it. Newcastle's right.
Newcastle is incorrect.
Oh, what?
Because
he's on loan.
He was on loan to both of them. He was still at Munster. He was still officially at Munster. Sorry, a bit of a cheap shot. That one.
Yeah, right. Massively cheap. Well done, mate. I hope you're proud of yourself.
Which means that Tim is the winner with 1 question to go.
Right. The only Leinster fly half I can remember prior to Sexton was Nathan Spooner. But it's not him, because that was far too early.
I was trying to think of Irish fly halves as well, but then David Humphreys was Ulster.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone.
And no, do you know what? I'm going to go for Eric Elwood. Oh, no, he was Connacht. I don't know. Pass.
I can't think of a single... Hang on, let me just... There must be... So Ronan O'Gara was so entrenched in that position, wasn't he, for years?
At Munster.
No, yeah, sorry. For Ireland. You can't just think about Ireland teams and go, oh, that's the guy from Leinster.
Before Johnny Sexton, I can't even tell you who Ronan O'Gara's backup most of the time was.
No. So that's the difficulty. And let alone, I just remember Nathan Spooner scoring a try against against the old Newport team in the Heineken Cup.
Pass.
You both passing?
Yeah. No, I'm going with Nathan Spooner.
Nathan Spooner is incorrect.
Oh, what a shock.
Felipe Contepomi.
Oh, damn
it. Of course.
You were thinking of Irishman. Should have looked a bit further afield.
Oh, good
one. So, Tim wins.
Yeah, of course.
5-3.
We'll check this out for a segue. An Argentinian player.
Indeed.
Argentina, the location that England are going to be sending a bunch of schoolboys to go and play international rugby.
It's a weird mix, isn't it? Because there are a few very experienced players.
I don't get this. Like
Ford, like Kerr, like Mike Brown, like Hartley, Haskell, Robshaw. And then there are, Launchbury as well. And then there are just kids. And there's 15 uncapped players.
See,
that's unheard of.
Now, Eddie Jones said, and I quote, "This is the strongest possible squad I could select." Rubbish. No way on earth.
All right. Explain yourself, Timothy.
There's some amazing players left out. He should just be honest and say, I've got a mixture of experience and future potential stars that I want to have a look at. So I don't need to see Tommy Taylor. I know what he's about. Although he's taken Hartley and it must just be Luke Cowan-Dickie's above the pecking order with Tommy Taylor. But there's a lot of, say, back row, for example, the Curry boys. And then you've left Don Armand, Dave Ewers.
Brendan O'Connor. I mean, Jackson Rae.
I mean,
Mark Wilson, the Curry boys. You're right.
5 years, the Curry boys might be great, but they're not England internationals.
Got some good steals. got some good steals.
Yeah, okay.
Steals for 80 minutes are good.
Yeah, they're good players, but there are, if you look at the best player,
Jackson
the best
Ray.
Team right
Do you
now,
know
yeah.
what? I've got to say you're right. Look, Don Armand, Jackson Ray, there's some solid performers. But
Now, think how hard Jackson Ray's worked this season. Think how hard Don Armand has worked since he's been back from injury.
Completely agree.
And they've played so well, and they're playing that hard, and they want to pull on. You know, Don Armand grew up as a, as a kid dreaming of wearing the rose when he was in Zimbabwe. but no, Jackson Ray played age group level. He's been working his nuts off. He's in an incredible Saracens team. And I can understand what Eddie Jones is doing, but it would insult me if I was Jackson Ray for Eddie Jones to say this is the possible strongest squad I could select.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's others as well. If you look at the wings having Nathan Earl, yeah. Solomona and Joe Corcanisana, Yard, Rocco, Ashton, James Shorten, Woodburn, Christian Wade, all overlooked.
Yeah, I wonder if Christian Wade is going to go the same way as, Alex Good, Strettle.
Yeah.
All those sort of lads. Like, kind of should have been good enough, but there you go. It's just not going to happen for him.
The second choice nine. You've got Danny Kerr in there, fine. And then Jack Maunder, who's 19, 20 years old, who's a good player, but that means you're overlooking Ben Spencer, Danton, Joe Simpson, Will Chudley.
It also feels like Eddie, in like some sort of Jurassic Park kind of move, Eddie Jones is messing with evolution in some way. It's like
interesting.
So there's the under 20s.
This isn't the British cycling team that we're talking about.
No, definitely not. So there's the under 20s World Championship, which is as it has been for years. Look at Maro Itoje a few years ago. Imperius, the best player on the park in that, and that's part of his progression through to the national team. So it sort of feels like Eddie Jones is tinkering with that process unnecessarily, because I would say that at the age they're at, a lot of these guys, Jack Maunder, the Curry boys, there'll be training camps when you can pull these guys in to include them in training. But I reckon they might have got a lot more out of playing a full tournament for England under 20s at this age than they will by going and playing the week games against some Argentinian students. And
do they have midweek games? I think they're just going to go straight for...
I don't know.
I thought it was a two test tour, and yeah, that was it.
So they're not. Well, unless he is going to play them in the tests and not worry about whether they win or not.
What I don't get, I mean, you're on one end of the scale, I'm on the other end, which is, does Nathan Hughes, I mean, does James Haskell really need to be working all summer? I mean, I know if you asked him, do you want to pull on the England shirt, he'd probably say yes.
Oh, he'd definitely say yes.
Yeah, because, you know, that's how they're conditioned. But would it not be better for him to all have a holiday? The senior lads have been working so hard.
But if you're going to bring the kids through and if you're going to develop them, you need some of those older heads and the experience. There's no point just developing an under 20 team in isolation.
Do you remember last Lions tour? Rob Shaw was captain of England, didn't make it. And that's what he did to him. They didn't take him on England tour either. They gave him the...
Yeah, they rested him.
They gave him a holiday. And I kind of think that would be the right way forward.
Possibly for some of the players. But
So you're basically saying you could have made this tour like an A-side, pretty much.
Yeah.
You could have done.
I'd rather see the Saxons go rather than full England squad, personally. Mm.
Given that it's only a two-test tour, I don't mind it too much. If it was a full with midweek games as well, like a 5-6 game tour, then I'd have an issue with it.
I tell you what I would quite like to do if I was Eddie Jones. I'd say, look, all you senior guys who would be going, you can go. It is open to you, and I appreciate the help bringing through the young lads into the England culture. If you want to come, you can. If not, go on holiday. No hard feelings. Because it has been a hard season, we don't need you.
Yeah, if I was an England player, I'd assume Eddie Jones was doing it as a test.
Yeah.
anyone who said, okay, mate, I'm going to book up my holiday. We'll never
play
it
again.
Yeah.
the trap has been sprung.
Yeah. Definitely. I can't imagine anyone taking that up unless there was. I'm just thinking, who's really been through the mill?
Not Dylan Hartley, but let's just go through. Luke Cowan-Dickie, Tom Curry, Charlie Ellis Genge.
Because a lot of these boys have had injuries.
Yeah, you're right. Launchbury, that's one.
Yeah, maybe Launchbury.
Tom Wood. Launchbury. If I was Eddie Jones, I'd go, mate, we'll send a trainer with you. Go on holiday to New Zealand.
Yeah,
go on.
Mike Brown, Danny Kerr, those are two lads. George Ford doesn't really need to play.
Well, given that they'll be in Argentina, Joe Launchbury could just have, because the two England tests will be finished way before the Lions tests, so he could then just hop over to Fiji or somewhere like that.
Exactly.
Station himself in the Pacific, just a short flight from New Zealand.
Didn't England's squad get announced on the same day as the Lions?
It did.
Yeah, it did.
It was day after, wasn't it?
Oh, it might have been that. Oh, I don't know. I was just imagining for a second Joe Launchbury opening up a letter. And you know, when you read the first line.
Oh, no.
Congratulations on your selection for the England squad.
No.
No, it'd be like him with the Wales man of the match all over again in the World Cup.
No, do you know what would be more cruel is if the England letter came through. That would be the worst one, because then you know you're not being picked the day after.
Yeah.
Yeah, it should be some relatively interesting games, I guess.
What do you two know about Piers Francis?
Nothing.
He plays for the Blues, right?
He does.
He plays fly half and 12. And he's 26 and
26.
He's 26. Could be all right.
He played at Edinburgh for a few years.
I knew he played at Edinburgh.
And then
26.
Yeah.
Why are they wasting their time?
But he's kind of second choice fly half for the Blues. So I know he's going to Northampton next year. I'm not that sure. It does feel a bit strange when you've got guys like Maunder, like Marchant, like Nathan Earl and Fijian Joe and the Currys and Underhill and Nick Isikwa, who's 19 and only just played his first Saracens Premiership game.
Yeah. Are big things expected of this kid? Or just because he's the next Saracens lock
they're massively excited. Well, I mean, let's put it, he's a Saracens lock. I'll just leave it there.
Yeah, okay.
He's a lock for Saracens. A young English academy product who's come through as a lock. The last two England players that have done that have...
They've done all right, haven't they?
They've done all right.
Yeah, yeah. Not bad.
And they're really young.
Yeah.
So, no, big things expected.
I tell you what, I'm looking forward to watching Sam James play for England. That'll be great.
I'm looking forward to his little grubber kick through and chase.
Yeah. Well,
over and over and over again.
Sam Underhill's the other one that Eddie Jones is sort of urinating around. Back off Wales. He's got him finally, so he'll be touring as well.
Yeah, Underhill has always said England would be the first choice.
He did.
Yeah, I think he's messed up there, but never mind.
Where I think England are looking strongest is the centre options that they've got. So you've got Malinder, Slade, Marchant, Sam James. Those four, with the right kind of experience, right game time, over the next few years could develop to be some seriously talented centres.
Yeah.
And you've got a nice combination of kind of strength, speed, ball handling and kicking ability in there. So it's a real nice package, that.
I wonder if Addison would have made it. Actually, and there's no Haley either, is there?
No Haley, no Alex Goode, no Jason Woodward, who was one who was possibly talked about.
There is. Can you believe, right? We've been having a good discussion about the England squad, and I haven't mentioned Denny Solomone yet. So
Well done you.
Yeah. I'm going to mention him now. I'm really upset about that one. I want World Rugby. In May, apparently, they're changing the laws. It's too late for Denny Solomone. Now, I already said earlier in the podcast, if I were Denny Solomone, I would have done exactly the same thing. If I had a young family and I had the opportunity to earn £22,000 a game, I would do
Absolutely.
It. So I'm not blaming Denny Solomone or anyone else for that matter, CJ Stander, but I do think the laws which govern the game should not allow it, and World Rugby needs to step in. There you go, said it. I'm not going to get in, into a big heat.
Well, I'm going to say this. Of all the Sale lads, I think the guy who might make it, because they've had this kind of quasi-England contingent, haven't they, with Mike Haley and...
I thought there was a conspiracy against Sale a few weeks back.
Well, certainly a conspiracy against Exeter. I mean, there's no two ways about that. I think it might be Sam James who is the pick of the bunch. I think once they have a good look at him, he would offer something completely different to what England already have. So quite excited about that.
Oh, I think Solomone is the most exciting one out of those. I'm not sure Sam James is going to make it to.
No, I don't think he's going to be a regular. But
I'm not saying he won't get an England cap. I just don't think he'll be I don't see him as a superstar of the future.
But he's one of those very rare players that always gets his hands free, and that's important. Shall we talk about the semis of the European plate or bowl or whatever it is that whatever they call it.
Yeah, yeah. Let me just say my experience of La Rochelle. I just thought that was a. I thought it was the only time I've ever heard of La Rochelle is in the Tricolore textbooks at school.
Yep.
When you're learning French, it is a beautiful little town for a start. Not rugby heartland, but those fans are absolutely nuts. And I've been to a Toulon game, and that was great. The atmosphere was better. The La Rochelle fans were better, louder, really? Madder than Toulon's fans were. I still, from what I understand, I've not been lucky enough to go to the Michelin Stadium or
Stade Marcel Michelin,
but that's meant to be the craziest. But French fans in general, British and Irish. Well, actually, I don't know about Irish. Munster fans were they're pretty nuts as well. Okay, so British rugby union fans. And excluding Ulster as well. So English, Welsh, Scottish rugby union club fans could learn a thing or two by going to a French game because it makes for such an amazing spectacle. I loved it.
I like it, but this comes down to things like booing the kicker, right? So we all get all on our high horse, oh, you should boo the kicker. Different fans have different ways of doing things. So, like, you know, you said the
bath.
Now, they should not start unfolding banners and throwing smoke grenades. It just wouldn't be very bath. So, you know, I think it's not necessarily about how passionate you are. It's how true to that reputation that you are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Exeter fans are completely different. I mean, Exeter fans are probably the closest things you're going to get to French fans.
Do you know what part of that is? And actually, Bath's actually quite a good place to go. It would help... But part of that is, now I think about it, because you're right, Exeter is good. And that is because the size of the ground is the right size for the number of fans. Mm. And that makes an unbelievable difference. So Thomond Park is rammed full.
Yep.
And the French stadiums, the La Rochelle's ground, they're top of the top 14. They got beaten by Gloucester. We'll get onto that. But that ground is 15,000 people and it was rammed and so loud. So that makes a big difference when you've got football stadiums half full.
Exactly.
Yeah. Or appropriately sized, like the AJ Bell Stadium, which is actually an appropriate size for most clubs, but half full.
Exactly. Or someone like Leicester. I mean, like, they are very traditional at Leicester. Mm. They only like 3 o'clock kickoffs. They try and hush traffic when they are kicking sticks. You know, they're not.
Which
gonna
is
be,
great.
Yeah, they're not going to be as crazy as the French, but they're very Leicester. And I think that's kind of what you're aiming for. It's the... idiosyncrasies of each crowd. That's what I like.
Yeah, I can see that.
What result
for Gloucester, though?
Oh, I know I mentioned him last week. I'm going to mention him again. I thought Mark Axon was very, very good.
Sausage legs
10, brilliant. I thought Trinder again was very good. Yeah. It was just a different team with that back line.
Trinder, if he'd been fit throughout his entire career...
England regular?
He definitely would have been capped. Yeah. Definitely. He's such a good player when he's fit.
Oh, they are just a completely different side. Now, you said last week Gloucester are a bad team and they're only coming good because they're a bad... I'm paraphrasing you. So
They played very well in games that don't matter.
Does this count?
Yeah, without any question. The first team all season to beat La Rochelle at home.
Yeah.
La Rochelle have only lost 5 times in 24 games in the top 14.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah, it's tremendous.
And bearing in mind how good people's home form is in France, that means they've gone to a load of teams' backyards and won, which doesn't happen in France very much.
No.
Hence, they're 9 or 10 points clear in the top 14 with 2 rounds to go.
9 points clear.
Are Lyon still in the top 6? Of course, nothing's changed from last week.
Lyon are 7th. Well, because there was a game, there was the Racing
Montpellier.
Who won?
Game. Racing, I thought it was, but I can't.
No, I think if Montpellier won, they would go into second. Anyway, so La Rochelle have been outstanding. Gloucester, what they have been doing the last few weeks, and it hasn't really been working. Now, sorry, there's a stat I've used before that I was going to say this is the difference with Gloucester. 10 times they've been in games this season where it's finished within 7 points.
Yeah,
with a margin of 7 points one way or the other. This was the first time they've come out as victors.
Wow.
They've been in tight games so many times and lost and not won any of them.
Yeah. Well, this Gloucester team, and it goes not just the backs but the pack too, there's this like a willingness to play rugby. You know, they're not afraid of using hands, they're not afraid of going wide. I'm not sure if that's completely changed from the style of play that they had earlier on. They just seem to have the personnel to pull it off.
It has changed, and David Humphreys acknowledged that. I think it was part of the reason Laurie Fisher might have parted company, because it wasn't working. But since he's gone, and also since the pitches have got drier and the weather's got better, they've sped the game up, and that's what beat La Rochelle.
Yeah, they do look quick.
They played everything fast. So every opportunity to do a quick line-out, they went. Willie Hines was more tired than any other Gloucester player because he was sprinting to the breakdown, got it away quick, just away.
Why doesn't he get more respect? Because every time I've seen him play, I've been impressed with him.
Well, he was captain and starting yesterday, and Greg Laidlaw's off, so...
Yeah, anyway, I guess he'll be starting next year. He'll be their starter.
Yeah, Billy Burns had a big game as well. And one of the reasons they haven't missed Greg Laidlaw is because Billy Burns... His kicking's outstanding.
Yeah, 100% in this game. Scored all of the points as well. I do kind of feel that as much as Gloucester were in it, if it wasn't for that intercept, it would have been the 10th game when they'd lost from 7 points or fewer.
Tell me this, just from a Gloucester point of view. Do they move Billy 12 Trees on, though? He's a bit pop player, and I'm guessing when they signed him, England international, club captain, must be on quite a lot of money.
No, not even England international, winning lion, Billy 12 Trees.
Oh, yeah, because he was called up, wasn't he?
talk about peak performance, when to move.
Peak 12 Trees.
Sickening.
That is the right time to sign a new deal, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just a successful Lions tour.
Straight off the Lions tour.
But yeah, your point about Mark Atkinson, very true. He does everything that 12 Trees does a little bit better.
Yeah.
And he's probably on considerably less.
Exactly. So I would think about moving him on. The only thing I haven't really seen from Atkinson so far, I've not seen him in a game under a tremendous amount of defensive pressure.
Okay.
So, but, you know...
In terms of when he's attacking and the defence...
No, the opposite, when he's defending.
Well, his defence in this game, some of the hits he put in were brilliant. I thought he looked really solid.
Yeah, good player. Also, his interview is available on the Rugby Dungeon. So go and look it up.
There you go.
Yes.
There we go.
One of Rugby's good guys.
Did either quick mention RGC? Let's get the full house in. Bingo! I win house.
Did either of you see the other Challenge Cup semi-final?
Oh wow! I'm glad we've. I'm glad.
No, I didn't. All I know from this, from what I've seen on social media, is George Ford had an absolute shocker.
Do you know what, though?
Which Brock James for La Rochelle had an absolute shocker.
I think absolute shocker is probably a little bit harsh.
No, I
hey,
agree.
Not my words. Yeah. Don't shoot the messenger, Phil.
Yeah. I'm defending George Ford here. I don't think he had absolute shocker. I don't think he had his best game. He did a few things very well. He did miss a few tackles. Some of his kicking was off. And he did miss the penalty for the
last... I think George Ford needs to really just... get his head down when it's Leicester and work hard, because his last few weeks' performances do not warrant the pay packet that he's about to walk into. They do not warrant his stature as the England 10. I actually think he's been so disappointing last quarter of the season. And I'll just add to that. You don't think he's had a shocker? Those two kicks were horrific. I mean, the missed conversion and then the penalty at the end to tie the game. I mean, I think that's really poor, actually.
Yeah, those were bad. But he also created a couple of tries by his good handling and timing of the pass.
Do you not think they had to go through an awful lot of phases in order to do that? I mean, they weren't clinical.
Yeah, yeah, and that's probably where I'd say the biggest weakness of his performance is. The kicks, he should have got one of those two kicks.
Yeah.
But the biggest issue is he has got a hell of an exciting back line.
Yeah.
One of the most exciting back lines in the league.
Yeah.
In Europe. And he's not getting the most of them. Certainly the last few games that I've seen Wasps play, Bath play, they've not made anywhere near as much as that back line. And he's also, besides the Scotland game, not got as much as he should have done out of the England back line.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I don't know why that is. I mean, I'm going to give him benefit of the doubt. I think Bath are slowly changing what they do, and you know, it isn't easy. But he was facing a tiring Stade Francais team. You'd expect them to do better than they did. He misses the kicks. I mean, I hope at Leicester is a little bit more of a settled environment for him, but very...
You say settled environment. The two guys who are going to be playing outside him, Tamura and Tuilagi.
Not even fit yet. Are they even going to... They will both be there next year, though, won't they?
I think they will both be there, won't they? Yeah. So, yeah, I'm not too sure.
Yeah. Now, a couple of really interesting things on this. Pillason.
Plisson.
Whatever his name is.
Plisson, best known for...
Getting
smashed in a whiplash injury that he claimed, where there's a claim, there's a blame against Courtney Laws.
Do you know what? There is, he's basically, I'm trying to think of a good equivalent, he's the French equivalent of Alex Cuthbert, in that everything seems to go wrong for him. And you can see why, can't you? I mean, all they needed to do is take the penalty, right? Take your maximum allotted time, game is over. So instead of doing that, he stood in the pocket and hit a drop goal. He's very lucky not to go down as the first fly half in history to knock over a drop goal to lose a game. It was such a stupid decision.
I mean, better players have done worse things, like Clermont when they went for the last season. They didn't take the penalty and they went for a quick try when Exeter got through the pool stages.
Yeah, when a penalty.
What was the fella's name?
It was Parra, wasn't it?
Morgan Parra.
Yeah. They had the option of a penalty 10 yards out from the sticks, directly in the middle, when all they needed was a penalty to win.
Yeah, it was...
A penalty for a losing bonus point, which would have gotten through.
To go through.
But then they're matched by equal incompetence, because Bath march up the other end, a 2-on-1, and I think the pass is too early.
Yeah, Watson and Rokodoguni.
Yeah.
What if Watson either dummies and goes, or just draws the man?
Yeah.
The fullback had drifted on to Rokodoguni.
I think Watson should concentrate purely on playing wing. I don't think he's good enough for fullback.
It's been my opinion for a while now.
He falls into the category of being too talented to be any good. He'll never develop the skills of Alex Goode. Let's put it that way.
The way you've described that Plisson thing, but the way that it's described on the BBC website is, Bath lose to late Plisson drop goal. Picture of Plisson with arms in the air. They've made it look like he's, just from that snapshot, they made it look like he's the hero.
Well, he was.
If it had gone wrong and if George Ford had slotted that penalty, or Watson and Rokodoguni, Watson hadn't messed up that.
Yeah.
Some of the tries in this game, though, because this was the most open game, even considering the Clermont-Leinster game, which was very open. This was the most open game. The first two Stade Francais tries were incredible. Their last try, the Hugh Pyle sprinting in from the lock, sprinting in from 50 metres after 77 minutes playing in the heat, and the Rokodoguni finish.
Yeah, that was pure Rokodoguni.
Stationary with 5 yards between an international fullback and the touchline, and he just shimmies, fend, and casually saunters around him.
Tell you what, I could put together one hell of an England team with the players not going on the Lions and not going on the England tour.
Well, I did it.
Have you?
My team is there. There's 39 players listed there.
Let's have a look at that.
Who are not selected for either.
Cat not going?
Nope.
What?
So this is not international, not... I mean, Wales haven't... This is just England.
This is just England.
Oh, my word.
This is an outrageous team.
Yeah.
Cat, Taylor, Brooks, Atwood, Armand, Ewers, O'Connor, Beaumont. Bloody hell.
Look at the depth in it. Sorry.
You got Armand and Beaumont in the wrong position, but I'm not going to pull you up on it. Spencer, Cipriani, Devoto, Trinder, Yard, Goode. That's devastating.
But Yard, Rocco, Wade, Short and Woodburn.
I'd probably get rid of Yard and get Rocco in.
He's there. That is a 39-man squad rather than a 15.
Oh, with you. Yeah, terrifying. Goodness me. That England have got some strength.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I think that's about it.
That's a pod. Yeah, that was a really nice brew that we had there, JB.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I forgot about this. We were drinking coffee today from Sail Shark's very own Dave Seymour.
Oh, is that where it came from?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, sorry. I was just having the last sip of my coffee and just thought it was really nice.
Yeah, he owns a company called... now, I thought it was... Crouch Grind Coffee. But actually, it's Couch Grind Coffee.
Yeah, I thought it was...
Crouch Grind Coffee!
Yeah. That's what I thought it was. So it's couch grind.
Well, I'm not great at reading, but yes.
Couch grind.
Yes.
Couch grind.
Yeah.
Couch grind. Naming companies and stuff is hard, weird and hard.
Well, I guess you've got the problem of, is the Twitter handle taken? Can I get the...
Yeah, the website URL.
When I set a rugby dungeon, I thought, no one's going to have a rugby dungeon, right? Wrong. There is actually already a rugby dungeon out there, which is why mine is the rugby dungeon. And now I'm stuck with this bloody name, the rugby dungeon, which is rubbish when I want to, you know, branch out into other things.
And we are...
Just because I, you know...
And we are, but I suppose I'm just wrapping up. We are Rugby Podcast. On Instagram, we are Egg Chasers Podcast.
What's happening on Instagram? We catch up once a week on the podcast about Instagram stuff.
Oh, what's happening? Alex Lazowski's girlfriend, Liam Williams' girlfriend.
I wonder if I'm going to be stopped in the street like, why is your Instagram account only following players' wives? I'm like, I don't know. I don't even have the password.
You had a nice little video yesterday of the Haribo, the BT Sport Haribo.
So yesterday was the first time that I watched a game from behind the commentators.
Okay.
Because there wasn't any seats allocated. The French are so French.
Are they?
So the camera guys. So the way we did it is me and Hugo did a pre-match bit. Sort of setting the scene before the game, and we had only a 5-minute window where we were using the French host broadcaster's TV to use it. So we had a 5-minute window to record a 2-minute piece. So pretty much it was like, you got one go at this, got to get it, you got to do it.
Let's do it live.
He got fired.
Big Bill
O'Reilly. Anyway, so we were stood there doing it. We had our 5-minute window, and they went, you got 1 minute until your 5 minutes starts. We go, okay. And then about 10 seconds before we were due to do it, the guy from the French rugby just goes, the sound not working. Okay. Like, okay. And then he went, your 5 minutes have started. It was their problem with the sound. He was just like, hopefully someone will fix it. Anyway, we got it done eventually. But they're like that about everything. Like, meh, meh, meh.
The sound engineer was probably just having a cigarette and a croissant on the back.
So I didn't have a... How
did they get anything done?
No, I know. It's amazing. So I didn't have a seat, so I stood behind the commentary guys. But they have... This is a little bit of a secret from behind the scenes. I assume it's every game. There was these two huge bags full of bottles of water, bags of Haribo, fruit. It's like, you know how players have... In the change rooms, have Jaffa cakes and jelly babies and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, the BT Sport commentary team have a bag of goodies like that.
You need to be energised.
Yeah,
I'm not sure I'd be going for the Haribo if I wanted the slow release energy. But...
True. What do the commentators drink? Because obviously they are always chatting, but I always like to think they've got like a flask of tea with them or something.
Oh, the French commentators will be on red wine.
Do you reckon?
Yeah. Undoubtedly.
Undoubtedly.
Yeah.
What does Nick take?
Nick...
I can't imagine he's got any time to stop and have a brew.
I don't think they do. A swig of water or maybe a coffee, I guess. That's
Bovril when
it.
It's cold.
Bovril. Oh, yeah. Bovril. Mullins is a Bovril man. There you go.
There you go.
I'm sure. Just quickly before we go.
Yes.
There are some Premiership fixtures next week.
Oh yeah!
We've got sponsors, obligations. Right, because I knew that, Phil, because I was just waiting to do Leo Vegas Bet of the Week.
Whoa, wait there!
Our Leo Vegas Bet of the Week, which could get you. Yeah, so rattle through the fixtures overall, Phil, and then we'll pick our game of the week to focus on.
Friday night lights. 7:45, Harlequins host Wasps. And
tasty.
8:00, Newcastle host Worcester.
Would have been tastier if Bristol weren't quite as bad as they are.
Mm. Yes. Dead rubber now.
So Newcastle win, and I'm going to go...
Worcester win that one.
I'm going to go Quins at home.
Yeah, that's a tough one, actually. Quinn's got battered at home last week by Exeter, didn't they?
So,
and they got nothing to play for, really.
Well,
they had a good 60 Wasps, minutes at home. But
so,
anyway.
Quinn's can make top six.
Yeah.
Wasps, if they win by 5 points, certainly, they cement top spot. Give me Wasps.
Mm-hmm.
Then we've got, on Saturday, 3:00, we've got Exeter-Northampton, which would be quite a good game.
Exeter.
Northampton, theoretically.
Do Exeter cement top two if they win that one? It's still not done till the final day.
No, it's still not done till the final day because Saracens are only 2 points behind them.
Reason I'm thinking is Wasps know they've got Saracens' final game of the season. That maybe that I'm, this is when pressure actually is on for Wasps. They'll be really wanting that home semi-final.
Yeah.
So I'm just, I've got a sneaky feeling they might finish third or fourth. Wasps.
Sailor away somewhere.
But I'll probably be egg on my face with that.
Wasps finish third or fourth.
Yeah, to drop out the top two, lose both their last games.
Oh, to lose both, they'd have to lose both, and Saracens win both by 5 point margins. And Saracens have also got these two games sandwiched between the semi-final and the final.
I've got to say though, I don't think I think the shine has come off Wasps a bit. I can see this Harlequins game.
Their attacking play is incredible, but they're just they'd let in four tries a game on average.
I do think this the Leinster Claremont game today did show a bit of the gulf between. It kind of highlighted the gulf between Saracens and the rest of the Premiership, because Leinster comfortably took apart Wasps.
Yeah,
it wasn't even close. So yeah. I think that they are struggling a little bit, but I still expect Wasps to beat Quinton's. We've also got Leicester hosting Sale.
Leicester,
if they win, will pretty much secure fourth place.
Give me Sale.
Give me Leicester at home. Sale don't really have anything to play for.
Well,
they definitely don't have anything to play for.
Well,
not finishing second bottom, they have to play for, I guess. Then Saracens host Bristol, which, even if Saracens rest, you'd expect that to be a five-pointer.
Yeah.
And the final game, West Country Derby, Bath host Gloucester.
Which is going to be our game of the week, right?
You reckon? No, there's nothing on that.
Well, no, Bath needs to get fourth.
And there's Bath aren't getting fourth.
The Gloucester revival.
It's unlikely. If Leicester win at home to Sale, Leicester pretty much secured.
So let's go. I think Quinn's Wasps is the tastiest one there.
Do you reckon?
Yeah, I do.
It probably is.
Quinns can get sixth, which is a Champions Cup place.
Yep,
they're 1 point off sixth at
and
the moment.
And Wasps know they've got Saracens coming to town, final game of the season, and could steal a home semi-final from them if they don't beat Quinns.
Yeah, okay, yeah. Fine.
And Quinns have beaten Saracens at home. They can put in a hell of a performance when they've got everyone fit and firing.
So both these teams have got massive frailties. That would be the first thing that I say.
But both similar, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both very flaky.
Mm. Yeah.
Mind you, I say flaky. I mean, Wasps are top of the table. How flaky can you be? But when they have come and stuck noticeably at the AJ Bell to Sale, quite spectacular.
I'm going to throw one more little thing into the mix. So the pressure will be coming on to Wasps. They showed in the knockout stages of Europe, they sort of crumbled a little bit. I think they'll feel like there's a bit of pressure. They're going away from home and they'll be thinking, we've really got to win this to take the pressure off ourselves against Saracens. And another thing to throw into the cocktail, Nick Evans's last game for Quinns.
Yes. Well, last home game.
Last home game.
Last game
two,
at the stoop.
Yeah, last so, two games.
Last game at the stoop.
So, after a season of watching Wasps, I've come to the conclusion that their weakness is Danny Cipriani, in the sense that they rely on him, same as Sale last year, they rely on him too much to conjure stuff up in order for them to win.
In Wasps?
Yes.
Do you not think Gopeth is way more important than Sippers?
No. Gopeth is an incredible player, kicks all their points, but has only played 10 a handful of times, and that's after the Cipriani implosion in Dublin.
Okay.
So prior to that, everything was really coming off Danny Cipriani. Then they met. You know, Gopeth has been amazing, but he isn't the primary playmaker. Now, do they go back to Cipriani this week after sitting him on the bench last week? I don't know. If they do, the weakness for Wasps is, can you stop Danny Cipriani playing? Because they're not a highly structured team. They don't strike me as a very, very well-drilled team over multiple phases. Instead, they rely on this pure flair. And if you can stop that, you've got every chance of beating them. It's very hard to stop, but you can beat them.
My Leo Vegas bet prediction is Quinns by six.
Yeah, I think I'm going to go Quinns by six too. I think that's good.
I think Quinns do have the chance to get sixth place, but Wasps is so much more important for to win. And with Wade, LaRue, Kirtley Beale, Elliot Daly.
Oh.
Nathan Hughes will be back.
Sippers and Gopeth.
Sippers, Gopeth.
Robson. Oh, my goodness.
Robson, Joe Simpson.
Hask, Nathan Lawnsbury, Hughes.
Lawnsbury, Hask.
Nathan.
Yeah.
Oh.
There's Ashley Johnson, Tommy Taylor. There is just too much quality and firepower.
Do you know what? I've got an answer. John Kingston, in fact, I'll save this one. So you're going Wasps by comfortably.
Wasps by 8 points.
That is our Leo Vegas bet of the week.
Oh, well, whatever.
Yeah, no, whatever. I think, I'll play out with a bit of music. Good work, Phil. Good work, JB.
Thanks, Tim.
We'll see you next time. So hit subscribe and then we'll have the next episode delivered straight to you. Thank you very much for listening. Find us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook. You can watch the video of JB's mermaid pose. Leave your reviews on iTunes. I'll tell you what, John Kingston, if you get the boys together in a huddle in the changing room and do this, you will beat Wasps.
Bye bye, Facebook Live.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.